It's the first day of November, 2004. We're sitting in Witte's restaurant at the golf course, looking across the third fairway, across the pond that was dredged from the great swamp, across the fourth fairway to the trees in the distance. They're in beautiful color and a clear blue sky on this beautiful day. To paraphrase Bobby Jones, there are two kinds of golf. There's golf and then there's tournament golf. There's no one in the last 30 years that has had more success in tournament golf here at the course at Yale or around the state and even beyond that than William Lee. And we are able to talk to him today. So Bill, with your experience, I would think you'd have a perspective that might be unique about the course, and I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Well, John, thank you for inviting me. First of all, I was thinking about this as I was driving out here from my office. And you and I have talked about it many times when we play, and that is every time you play this course, you experience a shot that causes you to produce some creativity in golf that you've never experienced before. And that's one of the things I enjoy about this golf course is every day, no matter what the weather is or how good you're playing or how poorly you're playing, this course demands creativity. Sometimes numerous times on the same hole. But that, I think, is one of the great things about playing this course. I started playing Yale in 1966 in the fall when I came here as a graduate student. They had no water. They had no golf carts in terms of motorized transportation. You had to hit your own golf balls on the driving range and then pick them up, which in and of itself, there was a real fellowship of practice men and women out there, because you had to hit your balls to a specific spot so that you wouldn't intermingle your balls with somebody else's. And there was a lot of character to the golf course in that you don't see now, in that you had a lot of fast rolling fairways. It played a lot more like the European Scottish courses did before they started watering them. There were a lot of bunkers that were in play then that aren't in play now. There have been a lot of bunkers that have been recreated, but yesterday as I was playing, I told this fellow he'd never seen the bunker in the hill on the second shot on the 18th hole. And into a north-northwest wind, that's a challenge to carry that old bunker, and if you got in it, it was a sure 7 and maybe a 9. I think it was in 1970, I remember, because they were still building the clubhouse in 1975 when I played here and won my first amateur, and there were several times when you had to stop play because the construction noise on 1, 3, 4, and 18 was so loud that it could interfere with your game. But it was about that time that they put in the cart paths, and Bill Beinecke gave the carts, and they established the driving range as part of the revenue source for the course. So the old fellowship of hitting your own ball ceased, and also, the whole character of the course kind of changed in because they put in water. And the amount of play that Yale used to have probably multiplied by 10. You'll remember that on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday, if you weren't out here by 9:15 or 9:30, you played by yourself. And during that time, the crowds at the Yale Bowl were so loud that you could hear them roaring all the way over here if there was a good play for Yale. But that changed, I think, the whole character of the golf course, and for good or for bad, it's kind of become the character of Yale as it is today. A lot of outside play, which I have no problem with. It's just that the outside play do not tend and care to the golf course as the old members once did. If there wasn't a rake in the trap, then you would use your own iron as a rake, or you would smooth everything out with your foot. To not replace a divot was a cardinal sin. to not replace an extra divot if you found it in the fairway was highly unusual, and to not repair ball marks as you found on the greens. But all that has changed over the years. I've had the pleasure of playing with 3 Yale College students who have made it to the professional level, and I've watched them with great admiration in their careers. Peter Teravainen, who was a great player out of Massachusetts, won the Mass Amateur. Bobby Hines from Long Island, and Heather Daly Donofrio from Fairfield. I think she's probably the equivalent of Larry Nelson, who didn't start playing golf until he came back from the Vietnam War. I think he was 22 or 23. Heather was on the swimming team until she was a junior. Then she started playing golf and advanced quite quickly. Back-to-back state amateurs for women and on the tour now. But I remember this clubhouse that we're sitting in. It used to be about a third the size it is. You used to go up to the grill room counter and order your sandwich. I think it was Muriel, and I can't remember the other woman. And you'd have your name on the ticket, and as soon as it was done, they'd holler out, "Godley, your burger's ready," or "Lee." You could sit inside that little grill room that probably seated about maybe 25 people at 6 tables, and then there was the great big porch outside with the fireplace they used for cooking outside. And so it's been, for me, it's now, 29, I started playing here, 66, how many years is that? 28 years.
No, that's 36 years,
yeah, maybe more. For a kid who grew up in Texas where it was real flat to play this golf course, it's quite a difference.
Well, tell us about how you learned how to play golf in Texas.
My father and my mother both played golf. My father played collegiate golf back then at St. Olaf College in Minnesota when you still had to wear a shirt and tie. In fact, there's a golf team picture at Phil's Barbershop on Wall Street, 82 and a half Wall Street, which shows the golf team, and they're in shirt and ties. It was taken on the 18th green, and they haven't restored those two bunkers, but there used to be two bunkers in the face of the 10th hill when you drove over. And I could never figure out where they took that photo because I had never seen those bunkers in all my time out there. But there used to be two bunkers there also. Well, my mother and father were golfers, and we just started playing as a family. It was a family outing for us as a group. My brother was an outstanding golfer. My sister was an outstanding golfer. In fact, my brother, I thought, was in the family the superior of all the golfing talent. And in Texas, he was in competition with people who had been on the senior tour, Butch Baird from Galveston, Texas, and Homero Blancas from Texas City, Texas, and my brother played against one another. Very flat down there, very windy, right on the Gulf Coast. I get a taste of the Texas wind here in the spring and in the fall when it comes out of the northwest. And which I believe is when this golf course plays the hardest. In the spring when it's also wet, but also in the spring when the predominant winds are from the north-northwest, which make the hardest holes on this golf course, which are 1, 4, 6, crosswind on 9, and 18. And then it makes that dog leg on 14 really a challenging shot because that wind will force you most of the time into the right trees.
So where'd you play in college?
I got to play at a small school in Illinois called Augustana College. It's in western Illinois. The Lutheran denomination university type college setting. Small, 1,500 students. And we had just by chance, there weren't any scholarships, six excellent golfers who came there at the same time for 4 years, and we won the college championship of Illinois and Wisconsin. I think it was 3 of the 4 years I was there, and then we went to the national championships 3 of the 4 years I was there. I get the college news every spring and fall, and I still hold the college record for the college conference of Illinois and Wisconsin that I set when I was a freshman in 1964. I shot 67, 71, and the record still stands as the lowest.
It's hard to believe.
Medalist, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had some good scores when I played there. Kenny Anderson came after me. He was the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Sure.
They often used to say Kenny Anderson from Little Augustana.
Yes, yes.
But that's what it was.
Yes.
Right on the Mississippi River. And then I came to graduate school at Yale, Divinity School, for 7 years. Enjoyed this course as a student. Didn't play competitively. I quit playing after the 1966 NCAA championship at Stanford because I had to work 3 jobs during the 7 years I went to Yale Divinity School. I worked in the steel mills of South Chicago in the summer, and then my boss was kind enough to let me take off Sunday mornings to preach at vacant churches. So my shift work was always, he let me have Sunday morning off so I could preach somewhere. So during the summer, I preached on Sundays and then worked the rotations at the South Chicago Steelworks. And then when I was at Yale, I worked a job here at the university every year I was here, and then would go home during the holidays and work in a clothing store in Chicago. But one of the nicest things during all that time was being able to play Yale as a student. You could join $25 for the spring semester, or the fall semester, or $75 for the whole year. The greens fee then for students was $2. And you had to walk, and it was always a challenge.
Well, in the 35 or so years since you've been growing up, you've won 10 championships here. You've been runner-up 3 times. You've won the Golf Association Championship 3 times. You won the State Amateur 3 times. I'd say that's a pretty good competitive record. And you probably did some things I haven't mentioned.
Well, what I like about my game is I've 2 or 3 times have had to lay off for 8 years, 7 and 8 years. I finished in 1966 collegiate NCAA 7th, and then was qualified as a top 10 player to play in the university division. And as soon as I finished that university division tournament, I came back home and put my clubs in the closet, and from 1966 until 1973 did not play a competitive round of golf. Casual rounds of golf, maybe 9 holes, something like that, but nothing in terms of competition. Then I took it back out of the closet, and in 2 years won the state am, and then in another 3 years won the state am again, and was runner up in that period. 74 to 79, I was quarter finalist, winner, runner up, and then 2 years later won again. And then in 1981, I started working 2 jobs, and one was with the city, so I kind of put it in the closet again. But from 1991 to 2004, I didn't play a competitive round of golf either.
When was your third amateur championship?
1990.
After again laying off for?
I had laid off about 6 years, yeah. Got my job with the city of New Haven. I was in an appointed position with the mayor. I didn't get reappointed, so I came out that summer and tried it again, and it was kind of a miracle. But I hadn't played really in 10 years in a state tournament almost, and won up at Hartford Golf Club on the last hole was four days, 36 holes, up at 5, drive to Hartford, play 36, come back home, try to get some sleep. What I remember about that tournament was my neighbor across the street had Alzheimer's, and I came home after making it into the finals. I got home about 8:30, and she was wandering down the street in her nightgown. And I had to corral her and then get her children, who lived up near, I think, Waterbury, on the phone to come down to take care of their mother before I could go to bed that night. And that was after my alternator bolt snapped off in the parking lot at the Hartford Golf Club, and I had to find a garage that was open at 7 p.m. in Hartford. So that was some trip. And then the next day it went to the 36th hole, and I was quite relieved. I had to make a 10-foot putt to hold a one-up lead on the last hole, and I did, and that was quite a win. But then after that, I had to put it back in the closet again for 13 years, and I've enjoyed playing this year. This is the first time I've played competitively since 91.
And how many times have you qualified for the U.S. Amateur?
5 times for the U.S. Amateur, 4 times for the U.S. Mid-Amateur, 3 British Amateurs, and I missed the U.S. Open by 2 shots my last time that I tried. I was a low qualifier, and that was about as close as I could get, because if you qualify around New York Metropolitan, you end up qualifying with the touring pros. They usually are either at Westchester or are coming from the tournament that's held in Bethesda, Maryland, the TPC down there. Or they come from Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Westchester. But you always end up, I mean, I remember being in the locker room that day with Mahaffey and Wayne Levy, and back then, I mean, all the top players. Wayne Levy was player of the year that year. And
so who are the best players you've played with here? Who are the best players you've played with all around the country and around the world?
Well, in Texas, I played competitively with Marty Fleckman from Beaumont, Port Arthur area. Marty Fleckman led the U.S. Open as an amateur in 1960, and they had the Open at Baldershaw, and he led it after 3 rounds as an amateur. He and I played together in the junior tournament schedules around Houston. And the great players that I played with who are now on the tour: Billy Andre from Rhode Island, Brad Faxon from Rhode Island. I got paired with Bob Tway and Jay Siegel. Jay Siegel and I were quite friendly when I was playing back in the 90s. He's on the senior tour. Played a couple of rounds with Joey Sindelar, a tournament out in Pennsylvania. Wonderful young man he was. He played for Michigan. Ohio State. And he's a very nice young man then, and now he's a great gentleman golfer now. He won this year. John Schroeder, who's on NBC, he's an announcer, played with him in the 66 NCAAs. He was the first player I ever played with who used the long putter as a student.
Back then?
Back then, as a student, he was using the long putter. That's unusual, but he did.
I once saw he and Arnold Palmer, or I was following them at Hilton Head, and on the first tee, all Palmer wanted to talk about with him was tennis, because of course his dad was national tennis champion.
Mm-hmm. I've had some great experiences caddying also. I caddied for 2 U.S. Open champions.
Well, we have to hear about that.
There used to be a Buick had a tournament in South Chicago at my home golf course where I played when I was in college, and they would stop there between Detroit and Milwaukee. And I got to caddy for Julius Boris after he had won the U.S. Open, and I caddied for Tommy Bolt after he had won the U.S. Open. I always tell a story.
Well, there got to be some stories about that.
Julie Boris was just as smooth as could be. I mean, he was just as sweet and smooth. Tommy Bolt, I used to watch play when I was a kid in Texas at the Houston Open. He was a tremendous striker. He won the U.S. Open at Southern Hills in Tulsa.
Right.
Well, he came through. He had never seen the golf course, and I knew from the caddy master who I had. I had Tommy Bolt. So I went out and learned that golf course real good. And on the third hole was a par five. He'd never seen the course. He'd say, how far is it? First hole, 127 of the hole. Second hole was a par four. You can see the green, 144 to the hole. The third hole was a par five, which was kind of a blind shot to an uphill green. And he said, how far do I have, son? I said, you got about 244 to the hole, and you have a bunker to the right, a bunker to the left, and a bunker over the green that you can't see. And he had a club in his hand. He came back over, and he slammed the club back down into the bag. He said, son, when I ask you how far it is to the hole, I want to know how far it is to the hole. The rest of that junk is negative golf. Do we understand each other? I said, yes, sir, Mr. Bolt, it's 244 to the hole. He hit it on the green and made birdie. But all day long, that's all he wanted to know.
He didn't want any thought in his head of where he shouldn't be.
Negative golf. He said, that's negative golf, and he's right. As soon as you put negative golf in your brain, you focus in and you say, uh-oh, there's a bunker to the right. Uh-oh, there's a pond to the left. Uh-oh, there's out of bounds over the green. It just affects your entire body. And he had never seen that golf course, and he played against all these touring pros, and 36 holes, and it was a 36 a hole golf course. It wasn't 18 repeat.
So there were 36 different holes.
36 different holes that he had to play. He'd never seen, and he finished fourth. And I was proud of having done that, but I always remember that. That's negative golf, son. That's negative golf. When I ask you how far it is to the hole, just tell me how far it is to the hole. And that's true. And when I go out and step off a golf course for competition, I'll mark where some of the stuff is on the green. Like there's a bunker you can't see. A lot of holes only have one bunker on the green, so if you're going to have to miss the hole, you can't hit the green. You want to bail out left, you bail out away from the trouble. But I've told that story many times, even to people who caddy for me, because sometimes they start thinking negative. And that was a great experience. And then I was scheduled to caddy for Tony Lima the day his plane crashed. He was coming back I can't remember if he'd won the British Open in Europe. I think he was playing in Boston.
Won the British Open.
I was scheduled to caddy for him, and he crashed. There was a private airport he was coming to just east of the course where we were. And that morning I was told that I had been assigned a different player because Tony Lima had known a child who was handicapped, and the kid wanted to caddy for him. And so the caddy master had honored Tony Lima's request, and I got assigned to play the caddy for a guy named Dean Refram. He was a tour player also. But the tournament that night, that Sunday night before the Monday tournament, his plane was coming in, and he had crashed, and he ended up, the plane crashed on the golf course in Indiana near this airport. But that next day, it was a very quiet bunch of players because he was always known as Champagne Tony.
Sure.
He was
sure.
A real sure. Sweet swinger. So I've had a lot of wonderful experiences on the golf course. People I've met, business people across the board. My best friends are the people I've met playing golf. The spectrum is... And I find that when you play out here, you just have a chance to really talk with people. It's just such a beautiful place to just converse about everything.
Well, what course? What course? We've talked about people. We've talked about competition. How would you compare this course to the courses you played around the country?
Well, when I first started playing at Yale, there was Golf Digest had the 100 greatest tests in the world, I believe it was, or it was the 100 greatest tests in America, and Yale was always amongst that. I think it was, whether it was alphabetical or whether it was by t- top 10, second 10, but it was always in that top 70. Since then, they have built so many golf courses in America, and they have built them with these degree of difficulty, with the equipment that's gotten so much better, that Yale's ranking may be down, but I still think it's still one of the greatest tests in America.
Well, yeah, I don't care about Golf Digest ranking. I want to hear about your ranking.
I would rank it amongst my top 10 favorite golf courses in the world. Wingfoot, Baldestraw, are my two best choices for golf courses, the old design. But Yale's got to be right in the top five for me. It is such a challenge to play this golf course. It is such a challenge every day. Today, the wind is out of the northwest. Yesterday, it was out of the southwest because it was an unusually warm October 31st. Fog and wet. Today, it's cold and windy. The leaves are blowing all over the place out there. It's a real hard challenge. I enjoyed watching the collegiate players here. I thought that was a real statement about how hard this golf course is, that they had
they didn't tear it up, did they?
The NCAA regionals, and only two players out of the top 25 colleges on the East Coast were able to break par. One is Bill Haas, and the other was the player from University of Rhode Island. But they could have set the golf course up where they couldn't have broken par.
Without a doubt,
you could set this golf course up, and nobody could shoot probably better than 72. And that includes, I think, touring pros if you set it up the right way.
What's the best score you've had here?
My best score here is 66. My best competitive scoring around here was 67. That was during the old Willie Neal Championship back in the about 1974. I shot a 67 here in that tournament. Woody Neal, who was just well known everywhere in the world of golf and sports, was a man who most people don't know how influential or important he was in this golf course. He and his assistant Terry Calabrese, when the Connecticut Golf Association was located in New Haven, were very influential in the operations, the running of this golf course. There's a plaque on the ninth tee in his honor, but the people who remember Woody and all everything he did are fewer and far between now, because he was up in his age, and a lot of his peers have moved away to Florida or passed away, but he was a great influence up here. But this place I call my Walden Pond, and I think a lot of people do. It's not only a wonderful golf course, but it's this wildlife preserve. And I used to play with this wonderful player from Yale who was a bird watcher. He was a PhD in biology, a wonderful player, now teaches at the University of Pittsburgh, but he was a bird watcher. He had his binoculars and his recording book in his golf bag. And in the spring and the fall would record birds that he had never seen before passing through this place on their migrations. But it is just to come out here in the late evening in the summer and to walk the first four or six holes is just to me like being at a place that...
Well, you talk about playing with people here, you talk about the wildlife, but I remember there was a period when you used to play a lot with a dog.
I did. Yeah, things have changed a lot out here. You used to be able to come out here and, well, there are still people who walk their dogs out here. They come out here.
But you played with your dog.
My dog was a part of our foursome and had wonderful golf etiquette, tremendous golf etiquette. He would sit down when there was a shot being made and would only move when we were walking. And would just explore each hole. And
he didn't chase the ball.
One time, the first time I brought him out here at night, he went after the ball, and I gave him a little pat on the nose and said no, and that was the end of it. He liked to swim in the ponds when it was hot, and he'd bark at the geese, but just for the fun.
How many years did you play with him?
Oh, I would say, he was out here 3-4 times. I would come home at night from work, and if he saw me go to the closet where the golf clubs were, he would come right there and sit there and look at me like, we're going to the golf course. And I would say, yep, you want to go to the golf course? And I'd let him off over by the driving range, and he'd just start running over here to me. Everybody knew his name, Koala, and enjoyed playing with him. Well, the pro, Dave Patterson, used to bring his dogs up here. They'd be sitting on the steps of the pro shop.
Holding the fort out there, yeah.
Yeah, but there are many people who walk their dogs out here. Robert and Wendy Nolan, I believe, live nearby.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were fun times. It was like a scene out of a movie where the dog would run around in circles till you could get him in the car to come out to the golf course.
Well, now
it's a wonderful place, though. Gosh, it's such a wonderful place. And more people are coming out to enjoy it now because the restrictions on who can play the golf course have been eased somewhat, which is fine. My only concern is that they tend to ride in carts and not walk, and cart riders tend to approach golf shots and the greens from the rear or from the side, don't replace the divots, don't see their ball marks because the ball is already passed where it landed, tend to be in a rush, don't rake the sand traps as much as they should. And for a purist like myself, and I know you're the same, but when you play, you want to play the ball like you're supposed to play. It's where it ends up, and sometimes you have to modify it because you end up in somebody's gigantic footprints in the bunker, which is just an unplayable line. Or a divot mark that is 2 inches gouged deep and not been replaced. And in competition where you have to play the ball where it lies, that's tough, and sometimes you've had to do it out here. Then it becomes highly unfair. But
well, now that you're a senior and now that you're back on your game, you're looking forward to senior competition, I would think.
Well, I played this year. I wanted to see where I would stand with everybody. That was all levels. I played the State Am, the New England Am, the Connecticut Open, Senior Open, tried to qualify for the U.S. Amateur, the U.S. Mid Amateur, the U.S. Senior Amateur, the U.S. Open, which was my first tournament after qualifying for that was my first tournament after 13, 14 year layoff, and I can tell you my hands were a little bit shaken on that first tee, but I just missed it one. I just missed by one, but I'm going to still keep trying like Jay Haas. I still can play with everybody, and I want to keep doing it because it's different levels of competition. What I notice is how far the players hit the ball now after 13 years. Last year when I was still playing just 4 or 5 rounds a year, I was still playing with my Persimmon Woods, and people would stop because it was like a relic from the past. They were my clubs, but nobody played wood. And I'm slowly modifying, getting what I guess you'd call it, a modern set. I've gone to the metal woods. I've revised my putter to a soft face putter, but I'm still playing my 1984
blade,
tailor-made blade, just pure blade. And maybe someday I'll go to a different blade. I get them re-gripped and they're good. But what I see is how far the technology has made the golf ball go and how it's modified what were once considered the great old golf courses. They've had to change, like Wingfoot and Baldershaw. Yale has basically remained the same. I do not think since I left here in 91, they added one tee on the first hole to the right and a putting green. But I think the golf course, in terms of its distance, has remained relatively the same golf course. They placed some bunkers back in, but it is still a test to shoot even par. A real test.
What's your best score this year?
I had 69 from the blues here. Competition, I had a couple of 69s, a couple of one or two under pars. But the best I had at Yale this year was 69 from the blues, which to me was a good test. It's a wonderful test. The greenskeeper who's doing wonderful revisions, but it's just a real treat to be back here. A lot of people I remember, a lot of new faces, but the golf course never changes. Every day, it's a new test of golf.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Bill, and we look forward to seeing you in the future.